CQ, CQ, this is KD0, CDQ, Mike here, welcoming you to the outreach program sponsored by the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This program has been established to help those wishing to learn more about our hobby and to further assist those wishing to upgrade license status. The program tonight will be an in-depth course pertaining to what one should know when studying for a general class license. This course will be conducted with two sessions weekly, which will be at 7 p.m. Eastern, 2300 Zulu, each Tuesday, and at 7 p.m., 2300 Zulu, each Sunday evening, letting it drop. For those that are already licensed and wish either a refresher course or would just like to listen, please connect to SCARS, that's S-C-A-R-S server, at either EchoLink node number 96140 or IRLP node 9614 or All-Star node AST 27404. For those who are interested, please contact myself, Mike, KD0CDQ, via email at VOIP at SCARS, that's S-C-A-R-S, VOIP, one word, .com, to enroll in the class and be given directions as to the study material required and the manner you will be connecting to the course. Letting it drop again. This material being presented is formatted from data obtained from the ARRL and is simply being forwarded in the presentation format by SCARS. Should anyone take issue to some of the technical statements made, and in keeping with not interrupting the class and session, please convey your comments or suggestions to the outreach program at VOIP at SCARS, VOIP, S-C-A-R-S, VOIP, .com. It should be mentioned that this course covers only the requirements pertaining to the United States Part 97 rules and does not include other requirements that may be found in foreign countries. Should any other country other than the United States wish to have their own licensing session on this server, please drop us an email, you know where, VOIP at SCARS, VOIP, .com. One more drop. The session this evening will be recorded and posted on the website at www.scarsvoip.com. Please note that all of the class members and instructors, it is extremely important that we all stay on the same page during these classes. The only question pool and copy thereof that should be used when participating in this class should be the one found posted on our website. Publications from other sources may or may not be current and should not be used during our sessions. Do we have any emergency or out of the ordinary business that needs to be handled before we start this evening program? Not hearing anyone, let us begin. Tonight's instructors will be KY6 Victor Gordon and K6 SUN Kathy, both of them in the sunny state of Florida. I don't know who's going to start tonight, so let's like open the party and see who starts with the first question. We're going to be into the Golf 1 Echo part of the testing. That's Golf 1 Echo, somewhere from there, so they'll tell you from here. Here we go, over to Kathy or Gordon. Take it away.
Yeah, I'll grab it, Mike. Thank you, sir. Good show. And good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Gordon, calls KY6V. And this is the second class out of a series of eight classes for the 2019 General License Exam. Before we get started this evening, I'd like to re-mention a couple of tips that were mentioned here on the first class. And that was, first of all, we were strongly recommending, and of course still do, that you do not memorize the alpha designators used in the answer portion of the questions. This A, B, C, and D routine will purposely be different when you take your exam, so don't fall in that trap. One of the good things to try and do is to pick something out of your initial original question and try to relate that to something in the proper answer. So sort of trigger you when you sit down and see the exam. Secondly, we noted on the first class that the band plan offered to you in our support material should be copied and kept handy. And please give this some serious thought. I think it'll help you considerably as we get started here. With that, let's get the class number two started. Give me a minute, and I will just go ahead and reset everybody's timers. Okay, KY6V here. We're going to start into group G1 Echo, and that will be covering control categories, repeater regulations, third-party rules, ITU regions, automatically controlled digital stations, and so on. We're going to start with the first question for the evening being G1E04. That's Golf 1 Echo 04. And it reads, which of the following conditions require a licensed amateur radio operator to take specific steps to avoid harmful interference to others or other facilities? Let me read it again. Which of the following conditions require a licensed amateur radio operator to take specific steps to avoid harmful interference to other users or facilities? Now, the answers that are offered are started with A. Again, forget the A. When operating within 1 mile of an FCC monitoring station. The second suggestion is when using a band where the amateur service is secondary. The next suggestion is when a station is transmitting spread spectrum emissions. And the last suggestion is that all of these choices are correct. Now, you don't get this very often, but you just got one. The proper answer is the last one. All, and it's D as in David, all these choices are correct. Let me buy a nickel here a second. So this question and answer is good as far as it goes, as far as I'm concerned. It should be kept in mind that we should be observant and diligent in all our actions at all times for others that may be occupying the frequency or adjacent frequencies that we are using or intend to use. Do we have any questions on this before we proceed on? KY6V, please. Okay, Miss Sunshine. Hello, partner. Are you ready? KY6V, please go ahead.
Well, thank you, Gordon. I'm not sure I'm ready, but I'm here. This is Kathleen, Kilo 6 Sierra United November, and I want to welcome everyone tonight to our last session for this general course before we turn it over to another instructor. My question is Golf 1 Echo 10. And it reads, why should an amateur operator normally avoid transmitting on 14.100, 18.110, 21.150, 24.930, and 28.200 megahertz? Now, your choices are the following. A is a system of propagation. Beacon station operates on those frequencies. Bravo, a system of automatic digital stations operates on those frequencies. Charlie, these frequencies are set aside for emergency operations. And D, these frequencies are set aside for bulletins from the FCC. Your correct answer is the very first one. Alpha, a system of propagation, beacon stations operates on those frequencies. Now, this just makes sense. Be aware of the activity on and around you at all times. And that's a very good suggestion. Any questions, any comments before I throw it back over to Gordon? All right, hearing nothing, partner. It is now your question, which is, and I'll let you tell them, but I believe it's in the two part, G2A. Over to you, KY6C.
That is a roger, roger, mademoiselle. We are moving into group 2 alpha at this point, and that group covers phone operating procedures, USB and LSB conventions, that's upper sideband and lower sideband conventions, and breaking into contacts and VOX operation, V-O-X operation. The first question that we picked for you this evening in this group is G2A01, Golf 2 Alpha 01, and it reads, which sideband is most commonly used for voice communication on frequencies of 14 megahertz or higher? Okay, I'll read it one more time. Which sideband is most commonly used for voice communication on frequencies of 14 megahertz or higher? The answers are upper sideband, followed by another answer, lower sideband, followed by vestigial sideband, and last in the Mohegans of the suggestions is double sideband. Okay, think about this for a moment, and then the proper answer is A, upper sideband. Let me buy a nickel. And I should say here that upper sideband on and above 14 megahertz and lower sideband on frequencies below 14 megahertz is the normal operating procedure, and this is not an FCC rule, but one that has been adopted as a gentleman's agreement. It's part of the ARRL band plan. Everybody pretty well follows that. You can get into some trouble when you cross-populate the same frequency with an upper and lower sideband simultaneously. So we all try to stick to that. Any questions on this one before we move on? Over.
N-O-7-O.
Hey, George. Good evening, sir. What are you going to put me on the pedestal on here tonight, sir? Over.
Well, that's a good thought. I think I shall do just that. I think I shall let all those that are listening to the podcast or tuning in on the conference tonight know that Kathy, K6SUN, is our net manager, which means that she is my boss and also all of the NCS or net control station people on South Cars, all of our bosses, all of our boss, and also that Gordon is absolutely the one who keeps things running and going as well. So that's the pedestal part. Now the technical question part for G2A01. Please, Gordon, what is the difference between double sideband that was mentioned as part D and amplitude modulation? The difference between double sideband and amplitude modulation, what would that be, please? KY6V, N070, over.
Well, now that's a pretty good question, George. Thank you, KY6V here. Double sideband actually means that your signal is transmitting both sides of center frequency. In an AM modulated full AM structured station, you're transmitting roughly 3 kilohertz in the lower direction and 3 kilohertz in the upper direction. So there comes the double sideband. Okay, when you go into upper sideband or lower sideband, it really is saying exactly what it is. You are only transmitting half of the signal that an AM signal would normally transmit. So you would only be occupying 3KC instead of 6. And if it's upper, you're transmitting on the upper side of the center frequency, and if it's lower, you're on the lower side. I thought you were going to try and catch me on vestigial sideband, because being an old broadcaster, you know, that can be an interesting subject all by itself, George. Did I answer your question? Over.
Yes, sir, at least one follow-up, and then I will stop. So does that, what you were saying then about the upper, lower, and double sideband, where amplitude modulation takes the upper three and the lower three, does that mean that the waveform as seen on an oscilloscope of a amplitude modulation signal would be the same waveform observed on a double sideband signal, KY6B and 070?
Well, yes and no. It's going to be the same waveform, but you're only going to see half of it. In other words, if you're using a spectrum analyzer, and that's what you just mentioned, if it was an AM signal, you would see it 6KC wide if you had the spectrum analyzer out to evaluate the bandwidth. If you were looking at the sideband signal, you would only be seeing 3KC. You know, you've been around for a long time. Let me ask you a question. I was sitting back trying to remember, and I'm a little fuzzy on this, is why this upper and lower sideband situation started in amateur radio as to being above 14 and below 14. Upper, you know, above 14 and lower below 14. And as I recall, and it's sort of sketchy, George, the original manufactured units that were sold to hams that they used as transceivers, with the heterodyning process that they used for, and mechanical filters and all of the rest of the stuff that went into making a single sideband transmitter, seems to me that they had problems in designing, which they've obviously mastered now, a radio that could be switched between sidebands because of the heterodyning process. Now you're a modern-day radio, you just throw a switch. I want either lower band or upper sideband, you know, that type of thing. Do you recall the story behind that? Over.
KY6V on the South Carson General Class Outreach program tonight, NO70. Gordon, I don't remember the technical part. What you're saying vaguely comes that I do remember a lot of discussion about whether to make upper or lower the predominant one at, on each band, and that was a matter of a lot of dialogue in the amateur radio community. But I'm afraid that I was a little after the fact. That was kind of I didn't really get involved with the hobby until after that time frame, other than having seen or heard some discussion either in the periodicals related to the hobby or among the people, the Elmers that I had at the time. So I guess I'm not sure myself either is what I'm trying to also to say to Gordon. But thank you for asking. Appreciate it. And I should get out of the way and let you go on for the rest of the class. But thank you for taking up my question as well. KY6B on the South Cars General Class Outreach, NO70. Over.
Okay. Well, thank you, George. KY6B here. I'm interested enough to get to the bottom of this. I'll do some research here mañana or in the next day or so. But I think I'm pretty close to the situation that was very awkward because of the heterodyning process that was used in the transceivers back in those days to make it easily switchable on the same band from either upper or lower, I think is where the cookie was crumbling. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to move on. Kathy, you're up. We're still holding true in the G2 alpha area from what I can see. Go ahead, Kathy.
All right, thank you so much, and thank you, George North, for your kind comments. I'm glad I'm the boss of someone. After 2 days of meetings so far this week and three more to go, it was a nice comment. And it's nice to be relaxed here as I do this course tonight. All right, let me pause just a moment, and I'll go into G2 Alpha 05. All right, and it reads, which mode of voice communication is most commonly used on the HF amateur bands? Alpha states frequency modulation. Bravo states double sideband. Charlie is single sideband. And Delta is phase modulation. And actually, the correct answer is Charlie, a single sideband. So, you know, this is the common practice, but you will find from time to time that other modes being used, AM being an example. Any questions, any comments before I throw it back over to Gordon? This is Kilo 6 Sierra United November along with K56Z, second session of the general class. Any questions or comments? All right, Gordon, hearing nothing, you again are going into a new section. This is Golf 2 Bravo. I guess talking about band plans and other things. So over to you for your section.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Kathy. We're now venturing into a Golf 2 Bravo, guys and gals. And this category of questions revolves around operating courtesy, band plans, emergencies, and that is including drills and emergency communication. So the first question that we picked for you folks tonight in this group is G2BO2. That's Golf 2 Bravo 02. And that reads, what is the first thing you should do if you are communicating with another amateur and hear a station in distress breaking in? Okay, I'll read it again. What is the first thing you should do if you are communicating with another amateur station and hear a station in distress breaking in? Now, the suggested answers that they give you here are the first alpha listing. Forget about the alpha. Continue your communication before you were... because you were on the frequency first. Continue your communication because you were on the frequency first. Now, isn't that undescribable? The second answer they give you is acknowledge the station in distress and determine what assistance may be needed. The next answer they suggest is change to a different frequency. And the last answer, which is Delta, they say immediately cease all transmissions. Well, I think it just, you know, stands out by itself. It's B as in Bravo. It's the second entry. Acknowledge the station in distress and determine what assistance may be needed. Kathy just handed me a note here that says my audio went down. Is it just low, Kathy, or what? Well, let me pull the microphone up here a little closer. Sorry about that, guys. Okay, on this question, you know, emergency traffic should always come first. Attend to helping in the situation without getting in the way of others trying to do the same thing. That can get a little touchy. you know, you want to help, the others want to help. Who was there first? Who's grabbed the handle? Don't get in and try to grab the handle away from them, that type of thing. So, you know, be smart about how you go about it. Any questions on this, please? KY6V. I understand I timed out right at the end. Shame on me. Any questions or comments on this last one? Okay. Kathy, I'll send it over to you. According to my scorecard, you're coming up with G2 Bravo 04, please. KY6V.
That is correct. And your audio is fine now. It just sort of went way down, not your normal voice, so I thought I would let you know that very possibly you just needed to bring it closer, but it was fine. And all of us do that once in a while, and we time out, and our audio goes low, so nothing to worry. All right, my session is G2, Bravo 04. Let me pause a moment before I actually read the question and the possible answers. All right, this question reads, when selecting a CW transmitting frequency, what minimum separation should be used to minimize interference to stations on adjacent frequencies? Alpha states 5 to 50 hertz. Bravo is 150 to 500 hertz. Charlie, 1 to 3 kilohertz. And Delta is 3 to 6 kilohertz. And your correct answer is Bravo, 150 to 500 hertz. Like I said, the answer B is correct. Remember that a good and normal CW signal will use about 500 hertz or less, dependent on the quality of the signal, the speed of the code signal, etc. So is there any questions, any comments before actually Gordon heads into a new section? You're getting these new sections tonight. Good job. Any questions, any comments?
NO70 again.
All right, Mr. George, go right ahead.
Well, thank you, Kathy. So source B was 150 to 500 hertz. So that's like 150 to 500. Those are some big numbers. And then it says 1 to 3 kilohertz. So what's the difference, which is a low number, so what is the difference between a hertz and a kilohertz, please? K6SUN, NO70, over.
All right, George, I'll give you the answer of 1,000. Am I correct?
Okay, so a kilo is 1,000. So when we hit things like kilo-ohms or kilo-ohms and other things later in the course, then that will also mean 1,000 then, I guess. Okay. Thank you, K6SUN, NO70. Over.
All right. You are a typical student, George. You like to throw those questions out to instructors to see if you can catch them off guard. You remind me of my students. Shame, shame on you. All right. With that, I'm going to throw it over to you, KY6V, and I think your section... And if I'm correct, you're again heading into a new section, and this is Golf 2 Charlie, and we're talking about your favorite topic, CW. Over to you, KY6V.
Yeah, thank you, Kathy. I don't know how I did that. I should have been a little more fair on it and given you some of the entrances into the next sections. But this is one of my favorite subjects at CW, and, you know, that last question, George, you know, I was expecting something a little more technical out of you, sir, you know, other than the kilohertz versus hertz, like, how broad is the signal when you got key clicks? How much does the frequency swing when you got a chirpy signal? And I'll tell you one thing, if you get up into the kilohertz with a problem like that, the world's going to know it. Okay, let me buy a nickel. I'm going into G2C. Okay, and this is going to cover CW operating procedures and procedural signals, Q signals and common abbreviations, and also full break-in. So we're going to start you off with G2CO1, Golf 2, Charlie 01. And it reads, which is the following describes full break-in in telegraph? And that's known as QSK, Quebec Sierra Kilo in the Q signals. Which of the following describes full break-in telegraph type operation? Okay, the answers are breaking stations send the Morse code prosine BK, Bravo Kilo. The second answer is automatic keyers instead of hand keys are used to send Morse code. I'm laughing about that one, guys, gals. The next one is an operator must activate a manual send-receive switch before and after a transmission. Those days were long past. And D is transmitting stations can receive between code characters and elements, and that is the right answer. It's the only one that makes sense. Transmitting stations can receive between code characters and elements. And I'd like to say this is an interesting and useful technique. Should the station or stations you are talking to want to make a comment before you end your transmission, they can do so. Because when you let off the key between the dot and the dash, your receiver is active, and if somebody keys down at that momento, you're going to hear it. And then you take things from there. Any questions on this, please? Over. Okay, Kathy? Stick with me here on G2. I see you've got the next one in the same group. Over.
Oh, yes, I do. My question is G2, Charlie 05. And it reads, what is the best speed to use when answering a CQ in Morse code? And your choices are alpha, the fastest speed at which you are comfortable copying, but no slower than the CQ. Bravo is the fastest speed at which you are comfortable copying, but no faster than the CQ. Charlie at the standard calling speed of 10 words per minute. Or Delta at the standard calling speed of 5 words per minute. And your correct answer is Bravo, the fastest speed at which you are comfortable copying, but no faster than the CQ. Now, the rule of thumb here is to answer the station at the speed that he or she used during the CQ. Slower is okay, but not faster. All right. With that, before I turn it over to Gordon to start another new section, are there any comments or questions?
NO70, once again, please. Over.
Go ahead, George. I threaten not to answer your call, but go ahead.
Oh, I wouldn't blame you. So, actually, I have one question and one comment, please, Kathy. I'll ask them in separate transmissions to keep it cleaner. My question is, this talks about Morse code. And, Morse code is kind of from way back when, and a lot of people thinking about getting a license have talked about the difficulty of learning Morse code. So do you have to learn Morse code to get a general class license? Back to you, Kathy. Over.
Well, actually, that was a very easy question. I know that is not required on, I don't believe, any of your license classes. It used to be. But, we do have that. We did have a Morse code class several years back. I believe it's on the website. And it was, I was in one of those classes, and it was very interesting to learn. And I never have gone back to it. Still have the key, and I have a great instructor, but it just don't seem to have the time anymore. But your answer is no, it's not required. So what is your other comment?
Well, Kathy, since you are a teacher and you have a tough room to to teach in, for sure. You know, the choices A and B, I had to kind of read twice. You know, the fastest speed at which you are comfortable copying but no slower, or the fastest speed at which you are comfortable copying but no faster than the sequence. Like, huh? Okay, so what's the difference? Well, it finally clicked on this. Because the CQ obviously is going to be sent at a certain speed. And here's my comment. I have learned a lot from you as a teacher, too. You've taught me a lot about different recipes. You've taught me a lot about radio and everything, too, as well. But, you know, I got to thinking on this. No slower than the CQ or no faster than the CQ? Let me reset. Well, since Morse code is a language, it doesn't make much sense to talk faster than the person you're talking to can understand the language in. Now, the reason this comes to mind for me is that, as y'all know, in honor of one of our Southcars members out of Russia, I have been struggling to learn the Russian language, and it's a slow process, but you know, if they speak slowly enough, way slower than they normally would in conversation, I can kind of catch a lot, about half the words right now on normal conversation. But when they start speaking faster, like, you know, faster than I would have spoken to them, I cannot understand what they're saying. So I'm thinking that with Morse code, that's why the choice of sending no faster than the CQ, because they're sending the CQ at the speed that they can themselves understand. So that's how I made the choice between choices of the first two answers about whether you should go no slower or no faster than the CQ. And that's how I figured that one out, Kathy. Hey, you know, you're a good teacher, helping students learn how to decide between different multiple choices. Thank you. K6SUN of the South Florida General Class Conference, 1070.
Well, George, I will tell you that English is the hardest language to learn. You're thinking of other languages like Russian, like Spanish and French, that they're hard for you to learn. But the English language is very complex, and most people like that come from, in fact, where I get my hair and my nails done, the owner is from Cuba, and a lot of the patriots there are, you know, Hispanic. So they talk in Spanish, and I know Spanish, but they talk very, very fast, and they have a different dialect. I understand Cuba is different than, I believe, Puerto Rico and Mexico. So, you know, when you talk about language, you know, it's always hard learning another language. And sometimes it's hard understanding people who actually, you know, the language. So thank you, George. And I'll throw it over to you, KY6D, for, and like I said, you're heading into another new section. I don't know how you did this, but you sure did. G2 Delta. Over to you, KY6D, from Kilo 6 Sierra United November.
Okay, Kathy. That's thank you. Thanks, abbreviated. TNX. Don't let her fool you, George. I bought her that straight key, and I've been the guy that's been using it, so we've got to get her back into the swing of things when she's ready. Probably when she retires, I would guess. Okay, guys and gals, let me buy a nickel here. We're going into G2 Delta, and that covers Volunteer Monitoring Program and HF Operations. The question that we picked for you in this category is G2 Delta 02. G2D02, and it reads, which of the following are objectives of the Volunteer Monitoring Program? And they list the following answers. to conduct efficient and orderly amateur licensing examinations, to encourage, this next entry is to encourage amateur radio operators to self-regulate and comply with the rules. The next suggestion is to coordinate repeaters for efficient and orderly spectrum usage. And the last one is to provide emergency and public safety communication. Okay, let me grab a nickel. The proper answer here is to encourage amateur radio operators to self-regulate and comply with the rules. Now, some people are going to get hung up with this question because the question read, the objectives of the volunteer monitoring program, not the volunteer exam program, okay? Now, the monitoring program are official observers that are designated to not necessarily police, but I guess that's a good word, the operating goings-on in their particular area of coverage, and to pinpoint anybody that is sort of stretching the rules and regulations or outright breaking them. They get in communication with that station, and they try to explain very politely what they observed and what maybe needs to be fixed. Let me buy one more nickel. And under normal circumstances, this conversation or communication between this person and you, the ham, gets things settled out and everything goes back to normal. For the people that say, hey, you're sticking your nose into my business and I don't like that and I don't want to talk to you anymore, period, are opening up the door for an FCC pink ticket to come waddling right in through the front door, because that's the next thing that's going to happen. The OS, the operator that is trying to help, is going to turn around and send a notification to the commission. The commission is going to turn around and give you holy heck. All right. Did I belabor this subject enough? Any questions on this? KY6V, over. Oh, George, I thought you'd grab that one and run with it. Just kidding. Okay, Kathy, stay with me on Delta Zero. Since I'm not giving you any of the new ones, just stay with me, will you? Over.
All right, it'll be my pleasure. This question is a G2 Delta 05, and it reads, which of the following is a good way to indicate on a clear frequency in the HF phone bands that you are looking for a contact with any station? Alpha states, sign your call sign once, followed by the words listening for a call. If no answer, change frequency and repeat. Bravo states, say QTC, followed by this is and your call sign. If no answer, change frequency and repeat. Let me pause for a moment. And Charlie states, repeat CQ a few times, followed by this is. Then your call sign a few times, then pause to listen, repeat as necessary. And actually, this is your correct answer, Charlie. Delta states transmitted an unmodulated carried for approximately 10 seconds, followed by this is, and your call sign, and pause to listen, repeat as necessary. Now, this is the way it's done. You call CQ no more than three times, give your call, and stand by for an answer. If nothing heard, try it again. Now, before I throw it out for any comments or questions, Gordon, I have a question out of you, or maybe George, you want to answer this. I've heard this quite often when I'm sitting here, maybe on a weekend, and I'll hear someone call, very possibly for you, Gordon, or for someone else. They'll just make the call out, and they never say a thing again. What is the proper, I thought it was always having their call sign maybe repeated by saying clear, no answer. What is the proper procedure for that? If you make a call out to someone and they don't answer, do you just disconnect? Because I've been hearing that an awful lot. Gordon, do you think you can tell me that?
Well, you raise a very interesting point, Kathy. KY6V here. Yes, I hear more of that, too, than I think should be going on. It's just bad etiquette. The proper etiquette is to call somebody. And if you don't get an answer, you do one of two things. You might wait a few seconds or so, give the person a chance to get to the radio if they wasn't standing next to it, call them again, and after the second time, if there's no answer, then you say that no contact made, and sign your call sign, and say that you're clear of the frequency. If a person calls somebody, does not get an answer, does not take another transmission that he's aborting the original call and leaving the frequency or releasing the frequency back to normal use, there are people out there wondering if he's still there waiting and what he's going to do next. Does that make any sense to you, Kathy? Over.
Yes, it does, and I often wonder if that's proper. Because I haven't been a ham as long as most people have, and so I just thought it was proper etiquette. A radio procedure is to, if there is no contact, just to say no contact made and sign off. But I've been hearing that a lot, and so I was just wondering, is that the proper way to do it? So thanks for sharing that. So any other comments or questions before I throw it to Gordon for his last question tonight? And for the general course. So any comments, any questions before I throw it to him?
NO70 with a question on station identification, please. Over.
All right, NO70. I was hoping you'd make a comment but not a question, but go ahead.
Well, Kathy, I am ashamed to say that I don't know the answer to this because I think it might have changed. And I know I could go look it up in the FCC regs, but that's the good part about having Elmers that help us through our life and experience as radio operators. Now, I'm reaching back to, I have to say that, well, Gordon's a former broadcaster, TV and radio, same here, and I know at one time that there was a 10-minute window where if you were involved in a conversation that identification was required every 10 minutes by both stations. I'm wondering if that 10 minutes still applies. It's question number one. And question number two, to follow up on that, the requirement also used to be there about identifying at the end of a transmission if you do not expect to be there at the end of the 10-minute segment. In other words, if this is your final transmission, one should put one's call in. And it seems like I'm hearing more and more cases, and I'm guilty of this, where I might mention the other call and say back to over to you and then another person's call sign, realizing that I may not be speaking for another 10 minutes, and then fail to give my call sign and therefore would remain unidentified, which could then lead to one of those little bitty tickets coming in the mail that Gordon was talking about. So could you clarify for me 3-minute versus 10-minute versus end of expected transmission time regarding station identification and what the current regs are? K6SUN or KY6VNO70? Over.
Yeah, I'll pick it up, George. KY6V here. Well, you're right on, and this is an interesting subject, too. Now, the rules and regulations, if you go into Part 97 and examine this, says that you will, to be legal, identify your call signs no longer than every 10 minutes. Okay? But I will hasten to add that it does not mean that you have to put your call sign in prior to that 10-minute period. So you and I could start a conversation without using call signs at all and be perfectly legal, long as when we reach that 10-minute point, we did give our call sign identification. And before I go into the last transmission part, let me comment on something else. I'm going to buy a nickel. It's very interesting to note that we here on South Cars use a procedure where you do not have to. We follow the FCC rules and regulations. So when you check in, you can give us your suffix as an example. You don't have to give your whole call. As long as you get back in there and give your full call within a 10-minute period. What's interesting here is this is not the rules and regulations in a lot of other countries around the world that have it, our South Cars server. So in some cases, it is necessary for those people, the European area and Australia, frankly, fall within this, where they are obligated to give their full call immediately at the start of their first transmission. And I don't think that's a common known fact. Now, on the end of the transmission, the rules read that you will identify your call sign on the end of your last transmission. So that speaks for itself, George. If you turn it over to somebody and you don't come back and say something because the conversation's over, you're not standing on both feet, George. Over.
Thank you. That so it's good to know. If better to identify then, especially if the conversation may change or others rotate in, and just make sure that I get my call sign in there when at the end of the transmission or likely end of a transmission, just to be on the safe side. Okay, I think I shall have to remind myself to do that. Thank you, Gordon and Kathy, and appreciate your helping me review this theory, even though I have the extra class. This is always good to go back and review the general class stuff. I'm thoroughly enjoying this. Thank you. KY6P, K6SUN, NO70. Over.
Okay, very good, George. Thank you. Kathy just said, without keying down here and giving her call sign to me, go ahead with your next question. So I will take that opportunity. We're going to go into G2 Delta 07. G2 Delta 07. And it reads, which of the following are examples of the NATO phonetic alphabet? Let me buy a nickel. I'll read that one more time. Which of the following are examples of the NATO phonetic alphabet? The examples that they give you, the first example is Abel, Baker, Charlie, Dog. The second example they give you is Adam, Boy, Charles, David. The next example is America, Boston, Canada, Denmark. And the last choice they give you is Alpha, Bravo, Charlie, Delta. Okay, I'm going to grab a nickel. The last answer is the correct one. That is the alphabet, the phonetic alphabet that is in vogue. Now, I'm going to say very openly that this is something that has changed several times through the years. I can remember when there was an Abel, Baker, and a Charlie, and a Dog. But the current accepted phonetic list is the answer D, and NATO, I will say, stands for the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. Okay, any questions on this one, please? KY6V.
CDQ.
Mr. Kansas, now Mr. Texas. I'm going to start calling you Mr. T. Go ahead, Mike.
Okay, whatever you want to call me. I have to jet away. I have I'm a net control at the top of the hour here for the Salvation Army, so I got to jump out of the study and get into the garage where I've got my 2-meter radio set up. So, Gordon, if you could take it from here, I would truly appreciate it. KD0CDQ. And introduce the people that are going to be on board Sunday. That's important.
Yeah, I can cover that, Mike. Thank you very much, sir. Enjoy the garage operation. Thanks for being here, and we'll see you Sunday night. Okay, were there any other questions on this phonetic alphabet situation, please? Okay, Kathy. Looks like this is the last one for the Mohegans tonight with you. K6SUN, KY6V.
Yes, it is. It's the last question and our last session before the new instructors take over next week. But in the previous question talking about the phonetic alphabet, I always get a laugh out of some people when they come up with different words and not using that, and I don't know if that's accepted, and I've heard you say that it's changed, but I always think of Fred when he does, for Mike in Michigan, he does, Great Lakes. I always laugh at that, so I guess a lot of people use whatever they want. All right, let me pause for a moment, and I'm actually going to do the final question for this evening. And it's Golf 2 Delta 10. But let me pause for a moment. All right, this question reads, what is QRP operation? And the choices are remote piloted model control. Bravo is low power transmit operation. Charlie is transmission using quick response protocol. And Delta is traffic relay procedure net operation. And actually, your correct answer is Bravo, low power transmit operation. Now, QRP normally means you're running low power. The list for Q signal shows QRP meaning decrease power, shall I decrease power? So with that, that is my final question. But are there any comments or any questions out there before I throw it over to you, Gordon, for any comments? All right, hearing nothing, Gordon. It's been a pleasure to ride along with you for the 2 days. And I'm not sure who the new instructors are. I think it's Roger. Maybe it is George. Or maybe it is David. I'm not sure. So I'm sure you do know. So good evening, everyone. Thank you for being here tonight. And have a good week ahead of you. Over to you, KY6V.
Okay, thank you very much, Mademoiselle. K6SUN from KY6V. Well, this completes our second class of the series of 8 in total. I'd like to tell everybody that we do have the first class is posted, the podcast recording, if you will, is on our website. For reference and use in any way that you feel necessary to use it. I will attempt to have this recording from tonight posted sometime in the morning and added to the first class, and we'll collectively do that after each class until we're at the end of the parade. Let me take a pause here for a second. Our next class will be Sunday night. That'll be Class 3. That is August the 11th at 7 o'clock in the evening. And that will be followed by Class 4 on Tuesday, which is August the 13th. Your instructors for those two sessions will be Roger and George. Roger W4RFJ and George NO70. And you've just got a super team coming up here to help you here next week. Roger is holds a degree in IT, has been a ham for a long, long time. George holds a degree, a master's degree in business management. He has also been a ham for a long, long time. They're both extra class license holders. They've walked the walk. They've talked the talk. They've worn the moccasins, and they're great teachers. So come help hold up the flag and join us here for the next two sessions that are coming on. In fact, all of the sessions that are coming on. Do we have anything out there for the good of the order before we try to wind things down here for this evening? If so, call KY6V, please. Okay, guys and gals, thank you very much for your participation. And Kathy and I have enjoyed the last two classes, and we're going to enjoy what's coming up here downwind, too. We're going to return the server back to normal use. And everybody have a good evening, what's left of it at any rate. And we'll see you as the coaxes start to cross. KY6V in South Cars is now clear for this session. Server is back to normal use. Bye-bye, everybody.